Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello, welcome to the March 8th edition of The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Tim McKenna.
Hello, Diane.
How's Tim?
I'm much warmer than last week.
It was warm, and it's sunny.
It's a beautiful day outside.
Yes, I think the polar vortex is giving up.
And be careful.
I know. Yeah, good
point. Yet. Not till opening day.
Well, opening day? Opening of what?
Baseball season.
That's another month.
I understand. I was down by the lake today, and I saw all the ice that's still there. We're trying to get rowing shells on the water, and it's not going to happen for a while. So
well,
it's...
they're saying that 90% of the Great Lakes is iced over.
Yep.
It's going to take a while. So, want to talk about the show?
Yes.
Okay. This evening, we'll be speaking with two really nice guests. But first, we're going to acknowledge and thank all of those who generously supported The Outspoken Cyclist and WJCU during Radiothon last month. My personal goal was to break the $2,000 mark for the show. We did indeed, by over 10%.
That's fabulous.
I know. Tim and I will read the names of the donors in a moment and where you're from, because they're from all over the country and Canada.
Yep.
Then we're going to welcome our first guest, Licking County Prosecuting Attorney Ken Oswalt. As you may remember from several of our past shows, we followed the case of Bob Lennon, the popular coach and teacher at St. Francis DeSales High School here in Ohio, who was struck and killed by a motorist who then left the scene of the accident. On February 24th, Mary Catherine Katie Paul, age 36, you know, they always say what her age is. It's like, you know, why don't they say something else? I don't know. But she was sentenced to 4.5 years of what could have been a 6-year prison term. She was also ordered to pay $20,000 in restitution and $8,715.65 to the victim's estate for funeral costs. Her license was also suspended for life in Ohio.
I think that's the important part.
I think so, too. We'll find out from Mr. Oswalt how the case unfolded, what it might say about such cases in Ohio and perhaps elsewhere, and whether he thinks this was a fair conclusion to the case. Although, you know, I don't know if he really has an opinion. I just know that he seemed to be a really good prosecutor. He certainly did get a prison sentence for her. I think she pled guilty. Anyway, Tim and I will fill you in on this week's exciting and interesting news, and then we're going to head out to Eugene, Oregon, and speak with the owner of Commotion Cycles, Dwan Shepherd. When most folks who ride tandem think of companies that manufacture tandems, only a few come to mind. Commotion is almost always in the top 2 or 3. What many folks might not know, though, is that Commotion also makes some single bikes. We're going to talk with Dwan about the history of Commotion, why their bikes are so well-liked, and what the tandem community might expect from manufacturers in the future. So once again, we are ready to give our most heartfelt thank you to all of the show supporters during Radiothon 2014. We're going to read the names in alphabetical order. So I will begin at the beginning. And the first person on the list is Scott Alpern from Mayfield Heights, Ohio.
And we have Lawrence Hansen from Solon, Ohio.
Steve Blystein from Euclid, Ohio.
Elizabeth Buchanan from Manaway, Ohio.
Joe Chupek from Shaker Heights, Ohio.
Wayne Clark from Cary, North Carolina.
Woohoo! Jody Zuranen from Dublin, Ohio.
Thomas Facklum from Cleveland Heights, Ohio.
Joe Florian from Dublin, Ohio.
Matthew Faye from Lancaster, Ohio.
Sam Garr from Spring Green, Wisconsin.
Addie Gerblick from Shaker Heights, Ohio.
Chris Hitchcock from Chagrin Falls, Ohio.
Kevin Hopps, Valley Village, California.
Woohoo! Look at that. 3,000 miles away. Thank you, Kevin. John Kocab from Cleveland Heights, Ohio.
Steve Kurt from Dunlap, Illinois.
Andy Lacombe from Loveland, Ohio.
Benjamin Martin, New Albany, Ohio.
Stephen McFarland from Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
Zach Mellon, Akron, Ohio.
Gary McKeaton, Mayfield Heights, Ohio.
Marion Offermat from Novelty, Ohio.
Andres Ozolins from Ithaca, New York. And he pledges every year, as many of these people do.
William Page from Flagtown, New Jersey.
David Peleg from Richmond Heights, Ohio.
Chuck Perry, Westerville, Ohio.
David Peterson from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Christopher Sachs, Pepper Pike, Ohio.
Michael Sherwin from Waite Hill, Ohio.
John Smith, Germantown, Maryland.
Luther Stevens, Shaker Heights, Ohio.
Cheryl Teer, Chardon, Ohio.
Frank Thayer from Houston, Texas.
Bob Werner, Grinnell, Iowa.
Gary Wilson from Hanover, Pennsylvania.
Jim Ziegel, Chicago, Illinois.
And Greg Zimmerman from Overland Park, Kansas. Thank you so much to all of you for helping us to make Radiothon just an awesome, awesome.
We did a fabulous job this year.
We did. And the station's happy with us. So we are going to head on over to Licking County to talk with Prosecutor Ken Oswalt about the Katie Paul sentencing. Mr. Oswalt, thank you so much for joining me on the show this evening.
You're welcome.
You know, I want to talk about the Katie Paul case. Can you give us a little bit of background before we move forward into what's happened?
Sure. I was appointed to the Paul case because Ms. Paul's father is a township trustee in Delaware County. In Ohio, all county prosecutors represent the township trustees in their respective counties. And the prosecutor there thought it was inappropriate or would appear to have an inappropriate connection to her office. So she requested the court to appoint somebody. So I took over working with the State Highway Patrol to investigate the case. And then the charges were ultimately filed in Delaware County.
So originally, I don't remember exactly when this happened, Ms. Paul struck a cyclist and killed him and then left the scene of the accident?
Yeah, it was on a Sunday, September 15th, a nice sunny, warm day on a country road.
Hmm. Okay. I have to ask this question. Was he wearing a helmet?
He was wearing a helmet.
Okay. Yeah. So, I know you wanted to wait to speak with me until after the sentencing. She was sentenced on the 24th of February. And the report that I read was that she received 4.5 years, a jail sentence of 4.5 years. Was this what you had requested? I don't know exactly how the process works.
No, I discussed with the victim's family in advance of a sentencing hearing what options I would have in terms of making recommendations or not. And it was decided that I would not make a specific recommendation. It's customary, first of all, when somebody in this county, in my practice, pleads guilty to the charges I selected. In other words, there's no reduction, there's no, you know, any change in the charge, that I will often stand silent. And the other thing is sometimes defendants will back out of pleading if they know the prosecutor is going to recommend a prison sentence. And quite frankly, since we had a visiting judge, I really had no way of judging what to expect from him. And last but certainly not least, I felt the Lennon family, because they were so involved in the cycling community and the school where Mr. Lennon worked, had enough people, either in written form or speaking, that could more eloquently than I state to the court the impact of Lennon's death on them. So for those reasons, I did not make a specific recommendation, with the exception of revoking her license.
Got it. And we'll go over the whole sentencing in a moment. But in fact, you did the court did receive a lot of letters on the Lennon side of the case, on the victim side of the case.
Yes, the number of letters were about 134, as
wow.
I recall. Some of those letters had multiple people signing them. So
how interesting. How interesting. I don't know if it had any impact or not, but certainly it makes me feel good that people actually did voice their opinion.
Well, in addition to that, there were probably 60 or 70 people at the courthouse.
Wow.
In fact, it was so well attended that the court had to set up an extra room and put a video feed for many of the people to watch court proceedings because the courtroom couldn't fulfill the demand.
No kidding. That is interesting. Well, you know, we report, unfortunately, on an awful lot of cycling car, you know, situations. And this one was particularly disturbing to me because she had hit somebody before.
She had a collision about 18 months earlier, not quite, where she hit a person on a bicycle, yes.
It's just amazing to me. So there was also a lot of uproar going back in the other direction from people once the sentence was handed down, and I know she was fined and her license was revoked, as you had requested. People were saying, poor Katie Paul, she was in a wheelchair, she had her foot amputated. I know there was that sympathy side of it, and I do feel badly that, you know, she's got type 1 diabetes and all this other stuff. But do you feel like this was a terribly horrific sentence?
No. I feel empathy for anybody that is going through any form of handicap, disease, whatever. I get it. I'm not immune to it. But at the same time, those people have to know if their handicap gives them certain limitations that cause them to be a risk to someone else, they shouldn't take their predicament in life, as bad as it might be, and ignore it to the point where they risk injury to others. And that's what she did here. She was driving without glasses after reporting having symptoms of double vision, blurred vision. So getting behind the wheel of a car in that situation, to me, is warranted felony manslaughter, which was what was charged on that. It would be just like somebody completely blind getting behind the wheel of a car and us ignoring the fact that you shouldn't have got behind the wheel of a car.
So there's been some question as to whether she will actually serve this 4.5 years. Will she?
I have no way of knowing for sure. Okay. She's certainly legally eligible after she served 6 months in prison to petition the court to be released early. There's been no commitment by the court, no agreement by me. The Lennon's family certainly will be notified if such a request is made. They can, under Ohio law, as a interested parties, they can make their thoughts known to the court. I would point out that it doesn't make any difference what happens to Katie Paul. Mr. Lennon's not coming back. Nothing we can do or say about Katie Paul will change that, which is certainly unfortunate.
Yes, it is. Do you think that there is a bias against cyclists?
No.
Okay.
I don't. I think there might be a bias against inconsiderate bicyclists. I ride a bike myself. I enjoy doing it, okay? But I also drive a car. I get annoyed when I'm driving a car if a bicyclist is just going down the middle of the road and not paying attention, that they don't belong there, or going the wrong way on the road.
Right.
And vice versa. If I'm on a bike and a driver of a vehicle isn't, you know, taking due care around him, me as a bicyclist, I get irritated with that driver. I'm not biased against car drivers. I'm biased against bad, inconsiderate car drivers. I'm biased against bad, inconsiderate bicyclists. And I think that's what most people would share as a feeling.
I hope so. I mean, we certainly hear a lot of bicycle bashing on the radio, which is just, you know, it's sort of like to incite riot in a way.
It's two things. First of all, it's people that don't know the full facts and want to assume that because of some prior experience they've had with a problem bicyclist that all of them do that, and that's just not true. The fact is, in this case, Mr. Lennon was exactly where he had a right to be, enjoying a nice bicycle ride, and there was actually no reason for this to happen but for Katie Paul getting behind a wheel of a car. And it could just as easily have been an oncoming car as it was a bicyclist.
Unfortunately, you know, we've seen a lot of it in Ohio in the last year. And I know you've probably spoken with Steve Maggots. He's the bicycle attorney who takes a lot of these cases. And I know he's been following this one. Well, I have to say that I'm glad you prosecuted it, because I think we got a result that may or may not change some people's minds about making the wrong decision and getting behind the wheel of a car when you shouldn't. And I appreciate you doing a good job for the Lennon's family.
No problem. I appreciate it. They're a nice family to deal with. It's unfortunate I had to meet him in this kind of situation.
Right.
And unfortunately, in the nearly 27 years of doing this job, I get to meet nice people for the wrong reasons.
I guess so. Well, let's hope there aren't any more like this coming year. I hope you have a nice evening, and I really appreciate you taking time speaking with me.
No problem.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye,
right.
Ken.
Bye.
Bye. Ken Oswalt joined me from his office in Licking County. What do you think?
I think really the right guy for the job again.
Certainly he seems to understand, you know, about cycling and about drivers. He used the age-old, you know, well, I'm a driver and I'm a cyclist. And you are a different person behind the wheel of the car than you are when you're riding your bike. By the same token, you know, I still was kind of hoping for just a little more, you know, on the bicycle side. But you know what? He agreed that she should never, ever, ever have been behind the wheel of that car.
Right.
So, and, you know, I appreciated that he got what he wanted in terms of a conviction. We are going to head on over to the news desk. And why don't you start with your first news story?
If you are in Tampa, Florida, the Tampa Downtown Partnership is making the month of March Bike Month. The Bay Cycle Campaign promotes leaving the car keys on the counter and bicycling to work, for exercise, or to run errands. The Tampa Downtown Market offered free bike safety checks, and they have a whole bunch of activities going on downtown for cyclists. So
in March, huh?
In March.
Because, you know, May is National Bike Month.
Well, this is Tampa, so they can do that. We can't do it in Cleveland.
Well, no kidding. We're lucky we can walk outside. So this story was written by Andra Stefanoni. It was for the Joplin, Missouri Globe, and the title was Have Bike, Will Travel, Campus Minister Provides Bikes to Students. It's from February 14th in Pittsburgh, Kansas, in a basement workshop across the street from Pittsburgh State University. Don Smith has been solving the transportation challenges of international students for 30 years. That's a long time. The workshop shows it. One wall is lined with tools, another with trinkets and maps and photographs from faraway lands. PSU has an international student population of 469, representing 37 countries and every continent except Antarctica. Well, they could always bring in a penguin, I guess. Some stay for a semester, some for a year or more. Their challenge is getting around here. Most don't have cars, Smith said, as he installed new brake cables on a bicycle intended for one of four visiting scholars from China. The four, Manjian Wu, Ziwei Wang, Zhenbo Wang, and Shi Wu, are researching and observing at the Kansas Technology Center this semester. They live at an off-campus apartment complex a mile southeast of the center, and the core campus is west of the center. To solve such challenges, Smith, who has for more than three decades served as a minister at Campus Christians, was inspired by a loaner bike program offered by a similar group at the University of Missouri. I thought we could do that, Smith said, but the first year, not one bike came back. Not one. So to improve the system, part of the problem he found was that a thief wielding a pair of bowl cutters can cut through cheap locks easily, so some bikes were stolen. Another was that students didn't heed my advice to lock them up, and others simply were busy getting ready to graduate or move on after college, and they just didn't return them. He began imposing a deposit, which is now $35 for the bike and $10 for a basket, and has had more success in getting bikes returned at the end of a semester or a year. Since July, he's loaned 200 bikes. Of the 25% or so that won't be returned, Smith said he isn't worried. That's just part of the nature of it, he said. I see it as still making a difference. So I thought that was kind of a nice thing to do. You know, international students have enough time getting here or enough trouble getting here. And then now they're able to have a bike.
And I think most places, that's all they need is a bike. They don't need a car, so that's perfect.
Exactly. And it probably isn't as cold in Joplin, Missouri as it is in Cleveland.
No, of course not.
Of course not. What you got?
This is over from the UK. A second cyclist has been stopped by the police on the M3 motorway after following a sat-nav. So we had on here a couple weeks ago the folks who made the wonderful maps for the Erie pathway, you know, to ride your bicycles on.
The I got a bike people.
Exactly. They could use them over in England, I think. apparently, this is the second time in 2 weeks that they've had a cyclist who's actually gotten onto the 70-mile-an-hour highway following the mapping program on his smartphone. And they didn't think anything about it, just pulling onto a highway and doing it. And apparently there was a report somewhere along the line of actually a third cyclist that had done the same thing. So they have caught a lot of flack on Twitter, and as most people would agree, disengage app, engage brain. Don't take your bicycle onto a highway.
Disengage app, engage brain. This is from the Money Talks Department of Track Cycling from Road CC by a guy named John Stevenson. And the headline, Corporate Sessions Hogging Track Time at London's Olympic Velodrome, say local cycling groups. Olympic legacy venue hard to use for riders it was supposed to benefit. Representatives of local cycling groups say they can't get access to the Lee Valley Velo Park's tracks because too much time is being allocated to companies running corporate events. The Olympic Legacy facility is due to be fully open to the public on March 31st and will offer a one-mile road circuit mountain bike course, BMX track, and the indoor velodrome that's been nicknamed the Pringle thanks to its distinctive shape. I guess we can all imagine what that looks like. But according to the Daily Star's Dominic Lemansky, local cycling groups have been unable to book the facilities because of demand from companies offering corporate sessions. It's interesting because you want the money to keep the, and yet you also want the people who need to use the track for, you know, practice for real things like bike racing. Anyway, Michael Humphreys from the Eastway Users Group told the Star, quote, it's like we've been campaigning to get a theater built so your local amateur dramatics actors could get on stage, but the people who were supposed to go on the stage didn't get a look in. Three companies, Face Partnership, Cavendish Group, and Rampage Event Management Velo Events, were selected to run track days at the park. Velo Events estimates it will be able to use the velodrome exclusively for 4 full days a month, while the Cavendish Group has obtained 2 full days a month, and Face Partnership expects to use the velodrome for 1 of 2 days per month. It's kind of an interesting story, actually. Local clubs claim that communication has been difficult with Lee Valley Regional Park Authority, the LVRPA, the body that runs the facility. Bruce Mackey from Lee Valley Youth Cycle Club said, it does seem to me that the demand will be from those who can foot the biggest bill. The LVRPA denied corporate clients were taking precedence over grassroots clubs. A spokesman said, quote, our programming includes 40% of clubs and school sessions, 55% for the public, and only 5% is allocated to corporate events. We've worked closely with local clubs and the cycling community as a whole to ensure a well-balanced program, which is unbiased and fair to all. Yes, we have corporate clients and events. However, the money earned from these clients is put back into the venue, which I knew that's, you know, I mean, there has to be upkeep. So I guess we'll watch that. I think that's kind of an interesting story.
This is for our listener, Greg, in Overland Park, Kansas. This might be something you're interested in. KMBZ.com, which is the radio station, 980 AM. On their website, they have a link to Overland Park, Kansas City leaders want to get more people on bicycles. They've launched an online survey to focus on the types of improvements the city needs to make, as well as bicycle routes people would use. There's a link there. Click on the link if you're interested in taking the survey and go from there.
This is about bike share because, you know, bike share is starting to roll out again for the people who had to put their bikes away all winter. And that would be Montreal and any of the northern climates. I imagine D.C.'s bike share, although this year D.C.'s had a lot of snow, but perhaps their bike share is back up and running. Bike share gears up to roll into 3 Milwaukee suburbs. So Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Washington, D.C. have grown their bike share programs to 170 and 239 stations, respectively. Midwest Bike Share Inc. could expand its inaugural downtown fleet into Shorewood, Wauwatosa, and West Allis in coming years. The three suburban communities are seeking a combined $1.5 million in federal grants, enough for each to develop a fleet of about 90 bikes and 9 bike stations, said Kevin Hardman, launch director of the nonprofit Midwest Bike Share. The first bike share station is outside Discovery World at Pier, Wisconsin in downtown Milwaukee. More nearby stations will be added this spring and summer, Hardman said. At full build-out, the downtown system will have 28 stations. If the money comes through, the network would grow outward and reach into Milwaukee's suburban neighbors. Hardman said the expansion into the suburbs would start in mid-2015 at the earliest. So that's kind of cool. Somebody's taking an existing bike share program and now, you know, starting from that hub system and spoking it out into three suburbs. I think that's very cool. So I only have maybe one or two more quickies. What do you got?
I've got three quickies that we can do. I came across a neat picture that is on the harlembespoke.blogspot.com website, and the picture's courtesy of the Museum of the City of New York. The title is Remembering Cycling on Fifth Avenue Circa 1896. And the neat thing about this is the reason it's up there is they said this goes to show that in 1896, women also embraced riding bicycles back in the late 19th century.
Well, true that.
We knew that. But what's really interesting is it's only cycles and pedestrians on the street, and the brownstones and all the buildings are no taller than five stories high. So it was really a neat picture to see from New York. This was 125th Street and Fifth Avenue.
No skyscrapers whatsoever. Well, my last item is from our friend Dr. Gabe Merkin down in Florida. You know, he publishes a health and fitness e-zine, and every once in a while, one of his articles, I get an email from him every week. And this week's talked about high animal protein diets in middle age may shorten lifespan. A study following 6,800 people for 18 years shows that 50 to 65-year-olds who eat a high animal protein diet, meaning more than 20% of calories from protein with two-thirds or more of the protein from meat, dairy, or eggs, have twice the risk of dying and four times the risk of dying from cancer or diabetes compared to those who eat less than 20% protein. So it comes from a journal called Cell Metabolism from March 4th of 2014. In this study, a low protein diet for all ages was associated with reduced risk for cancer. There is a difference between protein from animals and protein from plants. The 50 to 65-year-olds who ate a diet high in protein, mainly from plants, had reduced risk for cancer. The authors then fed a low-protein diet for 2 months to mice at high risk for cancers and found smaller tumor growth and prolonged lifespans.
So, in other words, more kale, less hot dogs.
Something like that. Hot dogs. Mystery meat? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's not meat. That's not protein, so that's probably okay. quick update on one of our past guests, Rob Jones. He is now just getting close to the border of Utah, ready to cross into Nevada. I'm sure it's been a very interesting ride for him with all the weather that we've had, but he is making progress.
I would say so if he's in Nevada. Last we heard, wasn't he in Kansas or something?
Yes, he's making a lot of progress. And then this is my last bit, and I know we talked about this before, but for those of you that are big fans of collectibles and eBay, the bicycle from Pee-wee's Big Adventure is for sale on eBay.
No way.
Yes, it's actually, what's the price? It can be yours for only $14,000 and he actually has certification for it. It comes with a signed autograph of Paul Rubens. And we could comment about a lot of things.
We won't. Are there any bids on it?
Yes, I think there are.
But nobody's met the...
Nobody's met the 14 yet, but...
How funny.
I'll report back on that.
Yeah, I want to know.
Future shows.
If somebody actually buys it. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break on the Outspoken Cyclist and head out to Eugene, Oregon, and we'll talk with Dwan Shepherd from Commotion Cycles. You're listening to the Outspoken Cyclist on WJCU.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
Yeah, it's been a long, cold winter, but that's about to change. As WJCU's 18th annual Irish Music Marathon returns, hosted by Uncle Fred and Greg Pretty, serving up 18 straight hours of fine Irish music, accompanied by your dedications and requests. Starting at 6 a.m. and running till midnight, only on St. Patrick's Day and only from your friends at WJCU.
Mm-hmm.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
We are going to head on out to Eugene, Oregon, and speak with the owner of Commotion Cycles. I'm really excited. I haven't talked to him in a long time. Dwan Shepherd. Dwan, thanks for joining me on The Outspoken Cyclist this evening.
Thanks very much, Diane. I'm really glad to be here.
We haven't talked in a long time. We've known each other a long time.
Yes,
and
we have.
Many of our guests seem to possess the bicycle gene. And you seem to be no exception. And one of the things you told me about yourself is that you started tinkering around with a bicycle like when you were 5 years old. So
I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
Well, but I'm used to that. I hear that a whole lot. So tell us a little bit about yourself and the path that led you to Commotion.
Oh, gosh. I grew up in a small town. I tinkered with all the neighborhood kids' bikes, and their parents figured out that if they would just let me take care of their kids' bikes, that they wouldn't have to worry about them. So they would also give me the rusted hulks that belonged to the kids who had grown up and no longer needed bikes, I guess. And I found myself with a collection of bicycles and parts. And, I guess that just led to continued obsession with bicycles until I was working in bike shops and getting further entrenched into the bicycle habit.
You started working in a bike shop at a really young age?
Yeah, I think I... became the shop kid for a small bike shop when I was about 15.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Running errands for the owners and eventually moving up to fixing flat tires and things for customers.
You know, we can fast forward through all of that stuff, but one of the things that always interests me is people seem to stick with the bicycle. So was anything ever as compelling to you as the bicycle?
I did a lot with music and theater when I was in high school and into college years. And, you know, I have a lot of interests like photography and drama and gardening and... I don't know, a healthy interest in the outdoors, hiking, skiing.
Yeah. You've pretty much always been in Oregon then, huh?
For the most part. I was born in not far from you,
right?
Akron, Ohio, and my family moved out to Oregon when I was 5 years old.
So you don't have much memory of Ohio?
Not too much, but I still have relatives in Akron and Columbus.
Wow. Tell us a little bit about the backstory that moved you from being sort of a shop guy into actually starting to build bikes and then into Commotion, which, you know, one of the premier, you know, most people think of it as a tandem brand, but we're going to talk about some of the other things you do, too.
Sure. Thank you. So I was fairly blue collar, I think, working in a bicycle shop, and a friend of mine had met a local frame builder, Gary Hale, who was a very creative, clever man. And he was teaching frame building classes. And so my mechanic friend, Bob, invited me to go meet him and check out this opportunity. Well, I said, no thanks. I don't have any money. I can't do that. But he convinced me to come along with him, and I did, and I met Gary Hale, who was very nice, and offered me a chance to take his class with no money down and pay $50 a month or something, until I had the class paid off. So I said, all right, I'll give that a try. And got along famously, found that I liked having a torch in my hand and cutting and forming metal, and built myself a frame, and Gary immediately offered me a job. So I ended up working for Gary for 5 years, helping him build bikes and doing other fabrication jobs.
Put that into context time-wise.
So this started, I think the frame building class was 1983.
Okay.
And commotion started in 1988. And the opportunity arose, basically Gary was doing more non-bicycle fabrication and decided to close his frame shop and offered to sell his tools and let me take over his lease. And again, I didn't have money, so I talked a friend into going in on it with me. And that's how we started Commotion Cycles with $3,000 and a shingle on the door of a small warehouse space.
Wow.
In Felony Flats in Eugene.
Wow. And you're still in Eugene.
We're still in Eugene.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to the new factory, and it's quite something, actually. If anybody is in the area and wants to see how it works, I imagine you'll give them a tour.
We do. We've got a pretty open-door policy here. We like to show off what we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we show people here, they get pretty wide-eyed because it's pretty unique. It's really well set up. It's modern. It's clean.
Yeah, it is very
clean. Our
staff
is really proud of what they do. So they're used to having us bring people through here. And these visitors usually end up being our ambassadors, so we like them to come through.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk a little bit about tandems, since I'm a Stoker, and I've ridden I've ridden your bikes. You know, we rode them for many, many years. When we look at the bike market, how big or small is the tandem segment of that market? I mean, can you put a number on it in terms of percentage or
Do you remember the Princess and the Pea?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're sort of the pea.
And that's a great analogy, one I didn't expect you to say, but that's good. Okay.
Yeah. Nobody really knows.
Yeah, of course not.
But, you know, we feel like tandems are not the ugly stepchild of the bike industry they once were.
Oh, good.
Just because, you know, most people know what one is now, it seems like, if they know anything about bicycles. You know, I don't really get peals of laughter when making the suggestion that people try a tandem.
Did you used to?
You know. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it. You know, it's like, I don't know, asking someone to have their grandmother get a tattoo or something. Just inconceivable.
Well, I can remember the first time I rode one. I was terrified. And then I remember the first time I rode one of yours, and it was a completely different experience from the other one I rode. Completely different.
Wonderful.
Totally different. And much, yes, much more confidence-inspiring, I might add. In the 25 years that I was in the tandem business, the tandem market really hasn't expanded. Do you think it's because there needs to be more product, or do you think there needs to be more demand? I know it's that chicken or egg thing. What's keeping the tandem market at the size? It doesn't seem to ever get a heck of a lot bigger.
Well, I think it's fine that the size that it is. We don't have any ambition to you know, to grow it into, you know, the next you know, pet rock or anything like that. It's not a flash in the pan. It's always going to be here. Do I think that it should appeal to more people? Yes. Should it be double what it is? I don't know if that's necessary. I think it's a good size. The people who are excited about tandeming together are in it for the long term, and you know, we think it's a good, manageable size, and I think we enjoy a good portion of that business.
Yeah, I would imagine that, you know, and I think we said right at the beginning of the show that when you mentioned the word tandem to anybody in the bicycle world who understands bicycles, you're going to be in the top two to three names that come up. You're either going to be one or two.
We certainly
usually
hope so.
Well, you know, I mean, we know the other guy, Bill McCready, Santana. But for the most part, it's, you know, it's one or the other. So, and one of the things you said, and I'm going to quote you, Commotion didn't just make a different version of what was already available. With my off-kilter view as lead designer, we have reinvented, tweaked, manipulated, and revamped everything, including the way people think about what a tandem or a touring bike can do. So what have you done differently that you can talk about? I'm not asking for proprietary stuff, but what have you done differently?
Yeah, it's all kind of incremental. I'm not going to pretend that, you know, when we surfaced, we had the perfect bicycle. I think you have to first think about how did people perceive tandems 25 years ago? And to me, you know, there's sort of this picture that a tandem is for, nice older folks to take for a sidewalk ride over to the ice cream shop. And, you know, we wanted to prove that a tandem can be an exciting performance vehicle. It can be something that you can really enjoy athletically. And you can expect more from it. You can expect it to handle as your best bike would, rather than, you know, having lower expectations because you're on a longer, bulkier bike. And so I think part of it is in the incremental changes that we've done, we've raised that expectation. So we're always having to improve and prove that we have a better product that gets people excited and gets them interested. So how do we do that physically? It comes down to trying different things with geometry, improving the materials and the fabrication process, and primarily what we do is we let our customers be involved in the evolution of our bicycles. So whatever direction, you know, we see our customers driving demand, that's the direction our bicycles go.
I am speaking with Dwan Shepherd. He is the owner of Commotion Cycles in Eugene, Oregon. I would agree that when you ride a Commotion, it does feel a lot like your regular road bike. If it's a road, I've never really ridden any of your fatter tire bikes. I've only ridden the road bikes, and I've ridden Speedsters, and I've ridden Cappuccinos, and I've ridden Alcaps. You know, I've ridden quite a variety of them. I rode the Beam for a while, which I loved, except it creaked. Except they creak.
Well, those are gone now for about seven years.
I know. Listen, I'm old. What can I tell you? So,
yeah, you're dating yourself.
I am. So let's talk a little bit about materials, because you guys work in steel and you work in aluminum. Have you ever had any interest in designing and building carbon bikes?
Certainly we've had interest. It's definitely high at the high end. But we're metal people, and we're good with metal. We like working with metal. We feel like the lion's share of the market is in tubular steel and aluminum bikes, and we feel like we serve that very well, and we'll continue to do that.
It seems like it's carbon all the way down on some of these road bikes. So,
yeah, it sure does. But, you know, we feel like we should work at what we do best.
Yep.
And not get distracted by, you know, what other people are doing. And I'm perfectly fine with sending customers to a good carbon builder like Craig Kalfy. I have no qualms about that, and I'm sure he needs the business too.
And he probably sends his metal people to you.
Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about your non-tandem bicycles, because you do make singles, and you make some very interesting singles. You make one sort of bomb-proof bike, and I remember sort of the backstory of this bike that, you know, someone needed a bomb-proof bike in South America, I think it was.
About our Americana touring bike.
I am. It's actually made of a tandem tube set, yes? Or was it?
Well, it started that way. Okay. And it kind of goes back to the custom touring bikes we started making way back in our early years. But things began to come together, and we used that example of a guy who was cycling across South America because, he really helped us define what ended up being a standard model for us. And basically what we've learned, over the years from making tandems is the Achilles heel on the typical bicycle is the rear wheel. And so when you put heavier people carrying heavy loads on a single road bike, you really have to worry about the rear wheel collapsing, let alone the load-carrying capacity of the frame. So we figured, well, geez, we have no problem putting 450 pounds of, two sizable human beings on a tandem. Why don't we take what we do on a tandem frame and make it into a super load-carrying touring bike? And the cool thing is you can do that without making it heavy. The Americano is actually considerably lighter than a lot of the other touring bikes on the market. And so that's been a really popular bike, and it's well proven, and we get emails and postcards and photos from all over the world with that bike. And we've since expanded our touring bike line. We've got a bunch of different models, from a 29er to a 26-inch wheel, and even a one that's lighter but does not have the tandem wheel set or tube set that the other touring bikes have, because some people don't need that kind of capacity.
Right. What about couplers? Are people still buying coupled bikes to travel with?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's still a big part of our business.
Yeah.
It's nearly half of our bicycle fabrication.
Wow.
Here is,
that's a big coupler. Number, half.
Yeah. That's a lot of couplers. I think we do more of them than any other company. And we started, when S&S Machine brought their first couplers to Interbike in 1994, I think.
Okay.
I remember talking to Steve Smilenik there, and he showed us how he tested the coupler to be, he demonstrated there with testing equipment. The Reynolds 531 tube with a coupler in it was stronger in torsion, in tension, and bending load than a non-coupled tube. And that really got me. And it's true. And it really, I've said many times, it's the finest bicycle component I've ever known of.
That's interesting. I have not heard you say that. We have built quite a few coupled bikes over the years, and I think it's a remarkable system. I love it.
It's beautifully made.
It is beautifully
made. Perfectly consistent. Never fails. It's just outstanding.
It is outstanding.
And it's an outstanding company to work with.
Well, that's true. Steve is a really cool guy, and he's open to people, working with his stuff. He allows people who are qualified to put the S&S couplers in their frames. So
yes.
What do you think of all of the new shifting stuff? What's working for you guys? What are you selling a lot of? Are you selling any DI2? Are you selling any Campy? What's going on in that market? Because gearing
tandems
is a problem.
Roll-off is really hot.
Roll-off
is hot. We're
selling
a lot of roll-off tandem and single bikes.
Cool. Finally.
It's great for touring. It's great for people who have never had a beautiful relationship with a derailleur.
that's a very kind way of putting it.
everything's inside, so you don't have to worry about it. And Roloff does such a beautiful job with that the longevity is outstanding. People are putting 100,000 miles on these things.
Wow.
With nothing but oil changes.
Wow.
And they've been around for 18 years now with the Roloff hub. Americans are slow to take it on.
Yeah. But, I mean, I can remember the first one we sold, and it was back in the 90s sometime. But, boy, it's been a while. It's been a while that
right.
they've been around.
Right. And, you know, it was a rare customer indeed that would come in and request such a thing. But now it's so well accepted. And at this point, we're one of very few companies that actually offer it integrated into a new bicycle. There just aren't that many. People are putting it on existing frames or bikes, but if the frame isn't really made for it, it's not ideal.
Yes, you're right.
But one of the things we've been able to do is, you know, we design a special dropout so that, for instance, you get a flat tire, you've got a quick release lever on the roll-off hub, and you can just drop it right out of the frame without having to remove the chain or the belt. Actually, all of ours come with the Gates belt drive at this point.
Yeah, really? You like the belts?
Yeah,
huh?
Really.
Yeah?
Belt is fantastic. Yeah.
They're quiet.
It's really good. They're quiet. They're smooth. You don't have to lubricate them. They're lighter than the chain. They last, you know, five or more times longer than the chain. That's good stuff.
It is good stuff.
It is probably not ideal for a fixed gear single speed, which is where they first appeared.
Interesting.
And people had trouble with that, so, you know, they got a little bit of a bad rap when they were starting out. But on a, you know, anything with a larger cog, like a roll-off system, or the Shimano Alphine, or tandem timing chain in place of a timing chain.
Right.
They're fantastic.
So now you can say
really,
timing
really well.
Belt.
Timing belt.
And you can
right.
be just like the cars. that
yeah.
Kind of came. Yeah. I didn't even think
well,
of it until this second.
That's Gates' pedigree as they've been in automotive.
Sure.
As well as, you know, things like, you know, conveyor systems for factories for many decades.
I want to just wrap up our conversation this evening talking about all the years you've been in the bike business. What's the biggest change you've seen? And it could be with equipment, or it could just be with the way. And I'm going to say in America, in the U.S., even though we have listeners all over the world. So, but what have you seen that has changed a lot?
Well, I think perception is really important, and I think that that bicycles are a lot more mainstream than they were when I was a kid. Even as a young adult, I really felt like I had to explain why I still rode a bicycle, you know.
As an adult, yeah, sure.
As an adult. I mean, it was pretty rare. But now, you know, here's what you see. In every kind of marketing, they seem to do anything to be associated with bicycles.
It's a good point. You're right.
Car ads, you know.
Yep. Medical ads, whatever it is. You're
yeah,
right.
Yeah, makeup, personal hygiene. Everything wants to have a bicycle associated with it.
Isn't that interesting?
So it must be a pretty good thing.
It must be.
And it helps the cycling industry. So we get some free advertising out of an ad being in the Double Mint Gum commercial or the... or the Chevy commercial, you know.
Which is an interesting point, because the bicycle industry over the years really hasn't done itself a lot of good in advertising, and so everybody else is kind of doing it for us.
Well, it's not a cash-filled industry. Advertising is expensive. And if you just splash it out to the general public, you know, it's not like selling toilet paper. Everyone doesn't need a $5,000 bicycle. Just a few of us need that. The people who have it really bad. But, you know, even the mass-marketed bikes help companies like Commotion and other high-end bicycle companies in the long run, because people have to start somewhere.
I guess I was thinking more in terms of just the whole idea that forgetting about all the expensive bikes like Commotions and all the other really high-end bikes, that in general the bicycle industry hasn't always helped itself, even at the low end, to promote cycling the way cycling's being promoted today, even if it isn't by the bicycle industry.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know what I would do differently.
If only we had that magic wand, really, because that was going to be my last question. So if you could change one thing in the bike industry, what would it be? But we just decided we don't know. So maybe it's just we'll keep going with what we're doing.
Concentrate on what I can do
exactly.
best and keep doing that.
You know, try
to set a good example, ride the bicycle a lot and, you know, smile and enjoy it and participate in events, promote events.
And talk to me on the phone.
And talk to you on the phone. That's
there
right.
There you go. Well, Duan, it's been really good to catch up with you, and I appreciate you taking time. I know that you guys are busy. We're just about ready to launch the 2014 season for real. I hope it's warm out there. It's still cold here, but it's getting better.
Yeah, it's a little wet out here, but it is Oregon. So
it is Oregon. It is, you get what you get.
We forgive it. That's right.
Well, have a great 2014 season. If I get to NABSA, I will definitely stop by and say hi.
Thanks very much, Diane.
All
I hope
right.
to see you soon.
All okay.
right.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Duan Shepherd joined me from his offices in Eugene, Oregon. Did you enjoy that?
Yes, and I don't know if I can say this on the air, but he makes cycle parts sound sexy.
Oh, you can say that on the air. There's only a few words you can't say on the air, and none of the ones you just said are those words. It's very interesting. His factory is beautiful. His paint facility in the factory really blew me away. I mean, I've seen paint booths, and I've seen, you know, different painting kind of things. I've been to Waterford. I've been to Seven. Commotion's paint booth is very, very nice. And they take a lot of pride in their paint. And their paint jobs are gorgeous. Actually, most of these companies do really nice paint. But I'm kind of partial to Commotion because they've got some colors that other people, stock colors that a lot of people don't have.
Well, in Commotion, everything is in-house.
Everything is in-house. That's correct.
They're not shipping pieces, parts, and assembling. Everything is right there.
Right.
So
that's pretty much our show for this week. I want to again thank all of the people who donated to Radiothon. You guys just rock my world. Thank you so much. We will be back next week with another edition of The Outspoken Cyclist. I can tell you that coming up toward the end of the month, we're going to be speaking with Congressman Earl Blumenauer. He's going to be telling us about his experience at this year's Bike Summit. And next week's show is still a surprise for everybody. So we'll see you next week. Have a great week. If you can go for a ride, go for a ride. We're just jealous. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at WJCU.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at WJCU.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.